Inside Chicago Government. ShyGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jarofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader, and he's here with me today. Welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Senator, I should say.
Today we're talking about a bunch of issues related to the police shooting of Laquan McDonald. You've written a few things about it, a couple recent blog posts in November and December.
Okay.
But let's set the stage for our listeners, for those who just came back from vacation on the other side of the world. In October 2014, 17-year-old Laquan McDonald was shot and killed by police officer Jason Van Dyke in what the police characterized as a justifiable shooting.
Yes.
They said McDonald was lunging at them with a knife. Some months later, attorneys for McDonald's family, apparently acting under rights granted by the family under probate law, which is an interesting detail, they subpoenaed a police dashboard camera recording of the event. The video showed Van Dyke, the police officer, emerging from his police car and immediately opening fire on McDonald as McDonald is walking away from Van Dyke. Van Dyke shoots him 16 times.
Okay.
The family reportedly approached city attorneys about a damage settlement, which City Corporation Counsel Steve Patton pitched to the City Council Finance Committee on April 13, 2015. The Finance Committee approved a $5 million settlement with the family, and the full council approved it on April 15, 2015. As part of the settlement, a county judge ordered that the video never be made public, but it was.
Yes.
In October of 2015, after a local journalist sued for its release in county court. We're going to come back to this whole city council approval thing later on. Let's go bigger picture, first of all. You like to contrast how Mayor Emanuel has treated two of the city's largest labor forces, namely the police and public school teachers.
Okay, I do that a lot.
And, of course, rank and file in the respective labor forces are represented by the Fraternal Order of Police and the Chicago Teachers Union.
Mm-hmm.
If I have this right, I think your opinion is that the mayor, right after taking office, tried to undermine teachers' autonomy and collective bargaining rights. But for police, the mayor seemed to not only give their union what it wanted, but his hands-off stance, I would say, enabled the sort of rampant, unpunished police mistreatment of citizens that has cost the city hundreds of millions of dollars in lawsuit settlements. Is that a fair assessment?
That's pretty good. There's so many issues stemming from the shooting. We're starting off with this particular one, which, yes, you're correct, is one of my favorites. The contrasting attitude that Mayor Rahm shows towards the various unions in town. As everybody knows, I'm a big believer in collective bargaining rights and unions and the city making good on its obligations to unions. But I must note that some unions are greater than others in Rahm's view of the world. And he quite clearly came to town determined to pick a fight with the teachers and make his name on the national platform as a Democrat who beat up the teachers, while he just paid no attention to the police. I paid a little more attention to the firefighters and quit after about, he was bothering them for maybe a year, and then he just quit on that front. So I have a theory that he was going to eventually work his way from the teachers to the firefighters to the cops, but he quickly retreated from the firefighters, never advanced against the cops, and eventually gave both unions contracts, which he signed on the eve of the election in the summer, I think, of 2014, in which they got, I forget now, 3-year contracts with raises plus retro pay because the contract had expired. In addition, in this last budget go-around, he passed a tax hike intending to make good, finally, on the obligations he had been foregoing to the respective police and firefighter pensions. In contrast, he wants teachers to take a pay cut. He wants teachers to pick up more of their health benefits and more of their pension payments, and just wants to freeze their wage. So that's how it amounts to a health cut. And he's willing to risk a strike to force that.
And as we speak, the Chicago Teachers Union just took an overwhelming affirmative right. strike vote.
So one issue is why the contrasting attitudes, and I suspect that he's no different than Rauner and Scott Walker in Wisconsin, and that they've made the determination, probably because they've done polling, that it would be exceedingly unpopular to go up against the first responders, which are firefighters and cops whose lives are on the lines when they perform their daily duties. But it wouldn't be as unpopular to go up against teachers, many of whom are women. So I suspect part of it is that Mayor Rahm thinks it's easier to beat a union led and largely represented by women than it is to beat one that are mostly men. And as one cop told me, sort of jokingly, I think, don't forget, we're also armed. That may have something to do with it. Anyway, he leaves the cops alone and beats up on the teachers.
Another potential explanation, prior to Emanuel taking office, private U.S. corporations had begun to siphon off public education dollars
yes.
with things like publicly financed charter schools and standardized testing regimes, and the share of public education tax dollars going to private corporations has arguably grown dramatically in the last 15 to 20 years. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
So the same is not true in policing. We don't, for example, have private police forces competing with public police agencies for tax dollars, at least on a large scale. I wonder if that partly explains why the mayor has gone, maybe not just, you know, in Chicago, why the government has gone after teachers, because it's the one labor force that is the most threatened by and most resistant to privatization.
Well, this is another one of my pet obsessions that, yes, if you can only imagine, if you would, Mayor Rahm or any big city mayor treating policing like they treat public education. So you say, well, the problem with policing is not high concentrations of poverty and lack of economic fairness, no jobs, etc. But instead, it's because cops are lazy. So the way to eradicate this problem is to encourage competition among police forces so that we're going to have less lazy cops. And so they start doling out contracts to private companies to do policing in some of the same neighborhoods where the public police department is, only the cops that the private company hires have less experience, less certification, get less money, pay more for their benefits, and then get to doctor up their crime statistics so that they can make claims that they're doing a far greater job of policing the community.
I'm imagining the Dick Cheney Charter Police Station.
Let's just call it, let's say, the Uno Police Station or the Noble.
Yeah.
So the point is that it's an absurd argument. It would never fly. And yet that's what we've been doing, not just Rahm, but that's what's been happening across the board in this country for the last at least 15 years as we advance this absurd notion that somehow or other the way to eradicate the inequities in public education is to pay teachers less, treat them worse, and give a greater share of educational dollars to corporations that run schools as opposed to putting them in the classrooms. And Mayor Rahm bought into that. Now, whether he really believed it, I don't know. But as you point out, there was campaign contributions to be earned from some of the wealthiest donors in the Democratic Party who believed in it or were making money from it. And so he was happy to go along with it, as was, I should say, Arne Duncan and President Obama and the Clintons. And so it's ultimately sort of a Democratic problem, but that's sort of where we are. And I feel as though we're emerging finally, slowly, from this insanity, or at least we're sort of paying attention to how inane it is as a prospect. But yes, you're absolutely correct. It's a great point. There was no money being made off of policing the way there's being money made off of running charter schools. So that has not been a powerful force. Also, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's impossible to imagine this, but let's say, you know, like the Koch brothers and Bill Gates and Eli Broad were to be financing a charter police operations, there would be huge resistance from the rank and file of cops, and I think they would retreat. Again, it's because I think teachers are more susceptible and easier to control.
The private corporations would retreat, not the police.
No, the police are armed. They're not retreating, okay?
Let me move cells now.
Yeah.
Recently, the mayor has announced a task force that he is commissioned to make
Sorry.
We have to try to be serious about this. The mayor cried, damn it.
Are you sure he cried? We have to do a FOIA. Did the mayor cry?
Watch the video.
It'll be redacted.
Wait, the video has not been released. So the mayor has commissioned this task force to make recommendations on what to fix to address police misconduct. But in 2014, the city received a 73-page study with recommendations on how to handle police misconduct. Mark Conkle of DNA Info, a veteran Chicago reporter, has reported that it was former police superintendent Gary McCarthy who compelled the mayor to authorize his pro bono study. McCarthy reportedly had hoped that the study would give the city leverage in negotiating the latest police union contract. And those contracts have historically severely restricted how the police department can discipline and dismiss officers. Conkle says that his sources claim that Corporation Counsel Steve Patton blocked McCarthy's efforts at reforming the police discipline regime. Any comments on that?
As I said earlier, I'm a big supporter of collective bargaining agreements and unions. And so I don't believe that it's the union contract that has kept Chicago from shying away from cracking down on abusive police officers. I don't believe that at all. I believe, for instance, in the case that everyone's talking about now, the shooting of Laquan McDonald, if they wanted to go hard after that police officer, they could have. They could have suspended him. They could have said that the video is evidence warranting Van Dyke to be taken off the job. He has due process. As Americans, we have due process rights. Everybody has due process rights.
In fact, you wrote in a blog post, some people have claimed that if that video had come out before the mayoral election, that Rahm might have lost. But you made the point that if the administration had let the video out and then the state's attorney had prosecuted
Van Dyke,
that would have worked in Rahm's favor.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I'm so disillusioned with the Chicago electorate. I think they could have released the video and Rahm could have done nothing and he still would have been reelected. They probably would still be reelecting Mayor Daley if they had the opportunity. But that's a very good point, that the city is reluctant to use the tools that it has. It's not an easy case to make, as we saw just yesterday. A judge acquitted a police commander of brutality in the case where allegedly the police commander put a gun down the throat of a suspect. So it's not easy to prove in many cases. I would say that in the case of Laquan McDonald's shooting, it's pretty compelling evidence, and that's what's gotten people riled up. So Mayor Rahm and his folks had that evidence in their possession, I would say, within days of the actual shooting, I would believe that the police department had it, and they chose to do nothing. So the real outrage is not whatever protections police officers have. It's that the city doesn't go hard after them. Whereas if we compare it to a teacher, if there had been any kind of similar accusation against a teacher, they would have immediately suspended him or her and begun proceedings to fire him or her and passed on whatever evidence they had to the state's attorney so there'd be concurrent investigations. They would never say, oh, we're helpless until the state's attorney weighs in. We're just going to wait and keep the teacher on the payroll. I mean, they don't want to rile up the police. They don't want a confrontation with the police. Mayor Rahm wanted to ignore decades-long evidence of police brutality because he was so busy fighting the teachers. So he didn't want to fight with the cops while he's fighting with the teachers. Probably never would have gotten around to fighting with the cops because, as I said, there's reluctance to go after the police department. It's a political decision. All of this is a political decision. So crocodile tear. I'm reluctant to even call it tears. I think he may have squeezed one tear out.
He said he's sorry.
He said he was sorry, yeah.
A commentary I listened to said that the mayor's press office released the text of the mayor's speech, but in the text it doesn't say that he's sorry.
That's interesting. I noticed a similar thing. Now here we are, like, delving through the inner workings of Mayor Rahm.
Inevitably.
Before he gave the city council speech where he said he was sorry, he wrote the op-ed piece he wrote in quotes. I'm sure he had nothing to do with the writing of it. I presume he read it before it was published. The op-ed piece in the Tribune and the Sun-Times, in which he said, I believe, I own this. I think that's his favorite saying, I own this. But in the text that was released by City Hall, it didn't say, I own this. That was a headline that was put on it. I don't know who put the headline on. It was the Sun-Times, the Tribune, the mayor's people put the headline on the piece when they sent it to the... So yeah, he's really trying to wiggle around and apologize for something without admitting he did anything wrong, being very evasive on crucial pieces of information, such as when he knew about the existence of the video, when he knew about what the video showed, why he decided not to watch the video, and of course, why he decided not to release it when he did. Yeah, he's being very evasive.
And this point is drawing lots of comments continually. What did Ram know and when did he know it? And you, again, you wrote a blog post, sort of a hypothetical about, well, what if he did see it and he's lying, or, you know, what if he didn't? I'm interested in the aspect of the mayor wanting to, above all else, control the narrative.
Mm-hmm. That's what he wants.
Having perhaps a perception of his staff or of he himself or both that releasing this video would let the narrative get out of control.
Yes, that's a good point.
I don't know if our listeners ever watch city council meetings on video when they have trouble sleeping, perhaps. But if you watch a city council meeting video, you'll see on your left or the mayor's right, there is this white guy with blonde hair, and that is Steve Patton, who we've mentioned earlier, who is the corporation counsel.
Brains behind Mayor Rahm.
And he hired Patton from the law firm of Kirkland & Ellis, where Patton worked since 1978. And there Patton helped to defend corporations in cases involving contracts, antitrust, product liability, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
One example that I found repeatedly is he represented tobacco companies in lawsuits brought by the likes of government agencies and sales vendors. So that's where Patton comes from.
Sorry,
we'll leave that there.
A cigarette lawyer. Oh, my God. Well, someone's got to do that job. They have rights, too, you know, Dave. That's just the guy we want representing the city.
So we won't go into why the mayor made that decision.
Yeah, he loves his lucky strikes.
Some of the reporting around this issue of the narrative control centers on what was the city council told?
Mm-hmm.
Because right now we have aldermen who are being harassed by their constituency for agreeing back in April of 2015, first at a city council finance committee meeting on which 35 members of the city council sit, then at a subsequent city council meeting where they approved this $5 million settlement with Laquan McDonald's family, as I said earlier, a condition of which was that no one releases this video. We've seen now transcripts of the finance committee meeting where it was Patton who walked through the reason for the administration wanting this settlement, saying that here's what the plaintiffs will say. They will say that the video shows that the shooting was unjustified, that McDonald was walking away from the shooter, police officer Van Dyke. At no time did he say, we looked at the video and we verify that. And so aldermen now are saying we were misled because, as one writer put it, Patton walked a very fine line. He didn't go either way. He didn't say, we believe this. He said, this is what the plaintiffs believe, and this is why we think, you know, the case might be good for the plaintiffs, and we just better settle now. So there's a bunch of issues here.
A lot of issues.
Yeah. Do you think that's a proper claim of aldermen? Again, we have the administration in the form of Patton controlling the narrative, and then we have aldermen saying, well, he didn't tell us he saw the video, but then no one asked to see the video.
Okay. Listening to you describe what happened, this is one of those moments where Chicagoans sort of come face to face with the fact that their legislative oversight body is rather inept and nothing more
Surprise.
Than a rubber stamp. We've been through this. It was supposed to change after the parking meter deal. I would argue that there was more intelligent analysis and discussion of the Laquan McDonald settlement than of the parking meter deal.
Well, it's exhaustive, that's for sure.
No, I'm talking about on the day that they approved.
With the finance committee.
Yeah, finance committee. And definitely there was more discussion about it than the TIF deal in the South Loop, in which they agreed to spend $55 million on a hotel that nobody wants or a basketball arena.
So you're talking about the five or six aldermen who questioned Patton at the finance committee.
More questioned than questioned those other two examples.
Questions on the order of why didn't they use a taser?
This is a tricky question here because at stake, really, fundamentally, more than anything else, at stake, what the aldermen were voting on was whether to approve a $5 million settlement. If they resist too much, it's as though you're fighting for a larger amount of money to go out to McDonald's family. In other words, what Patton was saying below the surface was, this is a horrible case against us. If we don't settle, $5 million could be, I don't know, $20 million or $30 million.
Litigation would be worse.
It would be
more costly.
Right. So let's just bury this thing. Trust me, it doesn't look good. So if you're an alderman, what master are you serving? That's what I'm trying to say. Are you looking for truth and justice in our criminal justice system in which there's very little of either? Or are you trying to save the city money? Are you acting as like a fiduciary overseer? I could argue both points of view. Mayor Rahm's point of view and Steve Patton's point of view clearly was, let's get out of this with the $5 million. Trust me, it will cost us more if we show this video, if we take this any further. Let's just bury this baby and let's not ask any questions. And so now the aldermen are trying to, it's like everybody else now, they're trying to walk a very delicate line where they're saying they're outraged, they feel misled, they wish they had seen the video, they would have demanded that the video be publicized, but would that have changed their vote? Are they saying, well, they would have done that because they wanted to spend $20 million on the settlement as opposed to $5 million? That's not clear. It's like everybody else in this sordid saga. This is sort of how the city of Chicago deals with these kinds of police brutality cases.
But don't you think, Ben, that had one or more aldermen seen the video, they would have been outraged? Because witnessing what happened is different from Patton describing that the plaintiff will say such and such.
Well, and it's the same point I was making about Mayor Rahm. They didn't want to see it. They didn't want to know. Because if you know, you're culpable and you're accountable and you're responsible. If you see that video,
then you're opening the police misconduct can of worms.
Yeah. And there's so many issues about Mayor Rahm's truthfulness in general. But in this particular case, there's so many issues where it's not certain if he's telling the truth. So, for instance, did Rahm see the video? That's what you were alluding to. This is one of the many questions about Rahm's truthfulness in this matter. Did he see the video before he released it to the public? And he claims that no, he did not actually watch the video until the week that the rest of the public saw it. So now he claims that he has actually seen it. So, all right, at least it's on the record that he has seen it, but he says he didn't see it until the rest of us saw it. Then the issue is, do you believe that? This is where I say, I personally have decided that yes, he did see it, because I think that the curiosity element in Rahm is so strong that he would want to see the video that would have such a profound impact, or could have a profound impact, on his reelection. So I think he did watch it. But I could also make the case that he didn't watch it because he wanted what I call plausible deniability, to be able to claim that he didn't watch it when people said, how could you watch something so horrendous and not do anything? So what I assume happened is that at some point, and I don't know when, some point probably before the turn of the year, so sometime in 2014, someone, maybe Patton, went to Rahm and said, hey, boss, we got this horrendous video that completely refutes our official explanation as to what happened in this police shooting. What do you want to do with it? Do you want to watch it? And Rahm says, no, I don't want to watch it, because if I watch it, then everybody will want to know why I didn't publicize it. So I'm not going to watch it so that I can claim I didn't watch it. Or he might have said, hell yeah, let me watch it.
And breaking news, NBC Chicago reporter Carol Maureen has uncovered emails circulating among the mayor's staff showing that they were talking about
it. They were talking about it in December of 2014. The great Carol Maureen, she filed a FOIA request, and the city sent her as heavily redacted emails, as they always did.
See, FOIA works for something.
Freedom, yeah. Yeah, it shows that the press aides were asking, the chief of staff was asking, hey, boss, what do you want us to do, basically? See, Rahm is careful, my bet is, to keep his personal emails out of the official exchanges. So you won't see a Rahm Emanuel email
saying, holy sh-.
Yeah, like holy sh-, which is what he says. So the staff communicates through email to each other, and then somebody goes and tells Rahm, again, plausible deniability. They're learning their lessons from Nixon and Reagan, their role models. I don't believe there's anyone in the city of Chicago who believes that Rahm did not bury that video for political reasons. Whether he saw it or not, I would say there are a few people who may believe he didn't see it. Most people believe he saw it. But absolutely everyone in Chicago thinks that he buried it for political reasons.
Let's listen to what he said about what he would do if he had to do it all over again. Recently, the mayor went before the city council and gave a speech where he pledged to get to the bottom of police misconduct. And he talked about the task force that he maintained to do that. And he apologized for what happened. And then afterwards, he talked to reporters. And here's what he said.
While I followed the practice, I mean, I didn't follow it. I mean, this is what Corporation Council did, et cetera. I should have challenged it. I should have challenged an assumption of a practice. So that would be one. You've heard me on other things in the city. Just because we've done it like this for 40 years doesn't mean it's right. Well, guess what? That's true about this. Just because that's how we've done it I should have, along the way, challenged the entire legal team and others about a practice that was actually undermining the very value that I think is essential for the public safety and this wholeness of the city. That's one. I'm trying to give you guys how I'm thinking about things and feel about things. Number two, a few times I was asked about this. I would explain the policy, etc. I should have given voice to the public's growing suspicions, distrust, and anger. And I did not. My voice is supposed to be their voice. My voice is supposed to be for those who are powerless to make sure that their voice matters as much as those who are in power or have power, in whatever fashion that power is.
So he's saying that he should have resisted his staff's predilection to keeping a lid on it.
Yeah. This is what I said earlier. He apologizes while taking none of the blame. Oh, I shouldn't have let my staff talk me into doing what I did. When in fact, nobody believes that narrative. That's the thing. Listen, Rahm, he's running for re-election. His instincts are, the first question he has on his mind is, how will this impact my re-election campaign? I do not believe his first consideration is, how does this affect the way we go about investigating claims of police brutality? Or what role does this play in the long history of police violence against people of color? Or what about the relationship between overworked cops in high crime areas where they're under tremendous stress? None of this stuff was on his mind. Oh, what are the policy ramifications and implications of re-releasing this video? That's not on his mind. What's on his mind is, how will this impact my election? And I believe what he said was, bury it. And then in the aftermath, after he finally was forced to reveal it, he resisted for months, he came up with this cock and bull explanation that the reason he buried it was because they were all following procedure of investigations and how they handle investigations. And I can tell you, they don't do this with teachers, okay? So it's like, this is not how investigations are handled when the city really is feeling strong and going after someone. They suspend the person from his or her job without pay if they can, while that matter, the matter of whether you can suspend them for without pay, is adjudicated, and they proceed with the legal case against the person. This notion that there's this time from the moment of dinosaurs, they've been doing it this way, is just something he made up. Like, he makes up most of his explanations as he goes along. And the only difference between this and anything else, like, let's say, Barbara Bird Bennett, any other shocking scandal about what the mayor did, is that this has lasting legs, and probably because the video is so outrageous. The video just completely exposes the lies, the official lies of the Chicago Police Department. He's just trying to get out of this jam. I would say that his chances of getting out of this jam, this being Chicago, would be pretty good. The only compelling difference is that the feds are supposedly investigating this. That presumes they're going to use their subpoena power to get at all the email. We're not waiting on FOIA stuff where Rahm may release all of it, may not release all of it. Some of it will be redacted. Others won't be redacted. He'll drag it on forever, forcing reporters to go to court. Not that silly little game that he plays, but like real subpoena powers where people go to jail if they delete evidence, destroy evidence, alter evidence. So that could be the only way that he's held accountable for what has happened here in this one particular instance.
And maybe the results will come before the next mayoral election.
Yeah, a guy would probably be in Leavenworth in the city of Chicago and reelect him. I got no faith in them. Like, You know, I've been taking heat from a lot of lefties who don't want Chicago voters to be accountable for anything. I think that Chicagoans also have some culpability in all this. We've talked about this. I don't know how they elected Daley for six terms. I mean, he was the state's attorney when Burge was torturing people. You know, he's looking the other way. Six times he got reelected. And I think you agree with me when I say he probably would have reelected a seventh time. You know, parking meter scandal, et cetera. The people of Chicago are very forgiving when it comes to their leaders.
Ben, that's all we got time for. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, sir.
Listeners, you know, we always welcome your questions, comments, and suggestions for future interviews. Search on all your social media for Inside Chicago Government. Our Twitter handle is CHIGOVT. I'm Dave Glowatz. Thanks for listening.